Welcome to Twos Talk with Tosh, Dino, and Donnie.
Tosh, how you doing, bud?
Good, Donnie. How you doing?
I'm great, thanks. No cardigan today. I noticed you commented already.
No, I think we're upgrading today. Like, for those folks that listen to the podcast, maybe it was the last week or the week before, I believe Dino has WD-40'd his door, so we don't get any door talk. He's got his dog under control, so we should be okay with that. It's been a good week, man. Just finished up some winter training in Edmonton and saw those kids. It was awesome.
Good. We're getting better every week, boys. It's good to know. Tweaks. Yep. I'm going to ask Dino how he's doing. He's going to say, I'm great, I bet. Here we go. So, Dino, hey.
I feel okay. Yeah. Always. Healthy, strong, like an ox.
Good for you.
It's all good. I'm ready to go. This is good. We got a good guest on here.
Got a real good guest. Dino, before we start, is it your diet? Are you training? What are you doing? What's got you so strong?
Yeah.
Good for you.
No.
I'm going to let him skate on that. That's fine. No, that's fine. Good for you. Dean,
little
whatever.
Diet, little, you know, I run a lot, right?
Is that right?
That's usually what I do. Yeah, I run a lot.
Good for you.
Yeah, that's really been helping. Yeah.
Runs to the fridge. Hey.
I didn't clarify that.
Those are sprints.
Unis came in. That's exciting.
Unis look great. Yeah, I was excited about
I did,
that.
And I got to say, I've said, wow, those look sick, Dino. And Dino thought I meant that was bad, but I meant that in the best possible way. I know it's a juxtaposition to say that, but Dean was like, well, I thought you'd like them.
Yeah, I thought I liked them.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
First of all, you got to explain juxtaposition to Dino. That's the problem.
It's a comment made in direct opposite. Wow. Yeah, juxtaposition.
It's quite early.
Yeah, well, just so we're aware.
But all over me.
I realize that when you say sick, you assume it means something bad, but I meant that in the positive manner.
Yeah, when I call you stupid, it's good stupid, too.
Wow, I'm the stupidest guy on the staff. I can't wait. Okay, so we got arguably the greatest hitter in the history of the game joined us today, which is phenomenal. He's got some roots here in Lloydminster. For me, that's phenomenal. So we'd like to welcome Mr. Colin Abbott to the podcast. How are you?
Thanks, fellas. Thanks for having me. If you could make your keep your words to 5 or 6 letters or less, that'd be great. you start throwing juxtaposition around and stuff like that, like right off the hopper here. That's a tough one to get started on it.
Well, to be fair.
To be fair,
I like to make people think I'm smarter than I am. So I've looked up a few big words and I throw them in here and there. And normally no one calls me out on it, so we get away with it. But I appreciate that. I'll keep it. You know, two syllables. That's what I'll give you that.
I'll start throwing marmalade and stuff like that around just to confuse everybody. Yeah?
Super frolic, pugilistic. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
So,
that's a big one.
So, Colin, obviously, you've come up on a few of our casts before, actually, as being mentioned as a monster at the plate and a fantastic teammate. You've played with a few of the guys here. So, I guess we want to start. Portugal Cove, am I saying it right?
Yeah, that's Portugal Cove, St. Phillips. We allowed St. Phillips in a few years ago there, but I've born and raised here, still here. I'm like 30 feet from my family home. The land was cheap.
Very cool.
Nothing to say. But yeah, I'm still here, and it's all good, man. Where I grew up and where I plan to stay.
Well, you're back there, but you've traveled in the last 30 years more than anyone that we've had as a guest, probably. So, going to start with, I want to start with this, and I've been dying to ask. Obviously, I'm from Lloyd. You played a couple years junior here in Lloyd. I want to find out, how did we ever get you to come here? Number one, and tell me about your time here with the Liners.
I played at the Canada Games in '89 in Saskatoon. And basically had a decent tournament. We had won the Midget Nationals the year before. Like I said, I'm a small-town kid from Portugal Cove. I go to a national in Napanee, Ontario, and it's like going to New York City when you're 17 years old. Eh? So, I didn't know anything from anything. I knew how to play ball against the local communities where I'm from. You start to get a little bit more knowledgeable, I guess, as you go to some of these tournaments that there is top level ball across the country. Played at the Canada Games. I met Mike Lamb at the at the games, and he asked me to play. And once again, I didn't even know where Lloydminster was. You know, that's a long way away from Portugal Cove, let me tell you. And just went there because, you know, I was told that Lloyd was a great place to play ball, and it certainly was. Awesome place to play when you're a 19-year-old kid. And just, I took a leap of faith, I guess, more than anything. I didn't know where I was going. Myself and Andre Costigan, another Newfoundland kid, we both went out there. We lived in an apartment together, and just kind of started from there.
So what did you have? What did Mike have you doing in Lloyd while you were here? Because I know there was a lot of, as a kid coming up, I think I might have been in maybe peewees or squirts. There's always junior players in the batting cage or raking diamonds or doing whatever. Did Mike have you raking, or what were you doing?
Hey, Donnie, just can I cut in for a sec? Sorry, I keep that thought there. Just for our listeners, there's something called whatsesaying.com. There's an app that you can get.
Wow.
I just figured, well, before we get too far into the podcast, I think we need to clarify that, you know, being from the East Coast there, you got a little bit of an accent. So whatsesaying.com. Whatsesaying.com.
As us Newfoundlanders like to say, we don't talk fast, you guys listen slow.
There you go.
Right. Get back to the Lloyd days. Basically, I mean, we raked diamonds, we dragged diamonds. There was five softball parks and one baseball park at the time, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, you mow the grass and you do all that. But the key thing was you're around the ballpark. So, you know, I was a pitcher at that time, so you could throw, you know, all day if you wanted to. You can take swings all day if you wanted to. Fly balls, ground balls, whatever you want to do, you're actually working at the ballpark. And that's what we did. I mean, we did all of that. We practiced a lot. You know, as a junior kid, we practiced, played every day. And Lloyd gave you that opportunity to do that. And, you know, it was friggin' awesome. I mean, I had a great time there, you know. You had a good job at that time, and back in 1990, you're making a few bucks, but you were playing ball. They were going all over Western Canada, you know, playing senior teams, going to the States and playing ball. And it was a real great eye-opener for me that there was such a great ball in the world that I certainly wasn't used to, you know, being from a small town on the East Coast. And it was, you know, I really enjoyed my time there.
So who else, you came as a pitcher, and obviously you smashed dingers too. Who else threw on that staff with you in the first 2 years you were there?
Jason Johnson threw with us. Timmy McCumber played with us. I'm getting a bit old now, fellas. I just turned 50, so my memory is not as good as it used to be.
Well, some of the names I just pulled up, just looking, like there's...
Was Robbie there? Yeah. O'Brien?
O'Brien came later.
No.
Well, but there was Andy Jackson. Sheldon Gardner.
Andy, yeah.
But there's guys like Chad Hansen was on in this group. The only program to win four nationals consecutively in the history of the game, which is phenomenal. But the talent that you guys pulled in from everywhere, we got names like Barry Ellerbeck and Scott Evans from Ontario. There's McCumber. There's you. There's Curtis Rouse from Saskatoon. Couple local guys, Todd Phipps, Garth Gazdowich, Scott Cullum, Danny Haygarth, Kelly Thiessen, and we talked about Kelly a little bit. He's the only one to play on all four teams at one, which is a pretty good junior career for sure. But just some of the names are Craig Crawford. I mean, there's a lot of talent that came through that area. 1990, that was your first year in Lloyd. You had what some could call, I guess, a good year, MVP of the tournament. Where were your first nationals with the Liners?
I believe we were in Quebec. It was our first national tournament was in Quebec. But get back to the whole program in Lloyd made you, it was such that it made you a better player. It had to. I mean, we're going to the West Coast and we're facing Terry Bell, for example, as a 19, 20-year-old kid. Or you're facing Dino, or you're facing Gene McWillie. I mean, you know, you're a 19-year-old kid and you're facing Gene McWillie, like, outside of crapping your pants, after the first pitch goes in, like, he's 8 feet tall and about, you know, 300 pounds, like, you know, but that got us to a point where we could compete anywhere in the country, you know, going down the States and playing at the Salt Lake City Days, I believe, 1 year.
Oh, that's a good tournament.
And, I mean, just, you know, that's irreplaceable. You can't even, you know, fathom how much that helped you as a ball player. So we get to Quebec in 90, And, you know, we're facing great teams. Like I said, you know, guys like Barry Ellerbeck and Andy Jackson and all these great pitchers in 90. And all of a sudden, you know, we had faced guys who were, you know, as good or better all year long. So you get to a point where these, it's no big deal anymore. It wasn't like we had to wait four or five games to get our bearings because we had faced that all year long.
So 90, you win. 91, you win again, obviously. And that that was your time done in junior. What was the next step for you as a player?
Actually, I was in talks of going to Camrose in 92. Tosh, I'm not sure. You spent some years in Camrose. I'm not sure of the years exactly. But and I get a phone call from Andy Jackson. They needed a third pitcher, hitter, outfielder in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Once again, from Portsmouth Cove, I go to Green Bay, Wisconsin. I have no idea where that might be, other than the fact that Green Bay Packers are from there. right? No idea. I mean, really, like I said, you're 21 years old at the time. And once again, it's a leap of faith. Like, no idea who was, what the team was. And to be honest with you, I didn't really know what the ISC was until probably 90 or 91. Once again, you knew about the Canadian Nationals, and that's pretty much, you thought that was the, you know, as high as it got and as good as it got. But all of a sudden, you know, you go down there and you're playing in the league with Green Bay, with Allgaier, and Graham Robertson and Paul Allgaier and all these guys are thrown against you. We weren't very good. We were an average team at best. But once again, you know, I'm hitting third in a lineup, and, you know, you go on a Wednesday night fun lead. Ah, we'll just go to get some swings, all right? So I drive to Circle Tap, a place that we all hold dear to in our hearts.
Unbelievable,
amen.
Great park.
That was before all the new renovations. The bar was right behind home plate. Fell off the bar stool there any number of times in my first few years, for sure. But literally right behind home plate. And we go to a Wednesday night fun league. So, sure, I'll go for a few swings. We get there, and Steve Jackson is throwing against us. Steve Jackson is pitching with the New Zealand national team, and he's throwing against us in a Wednesday night fun league. you can't help but get
that. Doesn't sound like fun.
Yeah, my definition of fun is very different. Batting off is fun. Batting off that guy sounds terrible.
It's fun when you actually get a hit off of these guys. The first few times you face them, it's probably not so much, but it's just an awesome. It was the place to play. I mean, and Dino, Tosh, you guys know in the Midwest, it was the place to play. You know, you're driving to Midland, Michigan, and you're facing Underwood and Peter Finn in a four-game exhibition series. That was in a couple of exhibition games, right? You probably go 0-12. You're facing two of the, you know, best lefties in the game. And you drive 8 hours there, go 0-12, and drive 8 hours back. Right? But all of those things is what made you a better player. Well, just one of two things. You know, made you a better player, you quit. Right? There was no in between, right? So, but the first couple of years there, we weren't very good, but it was a great, great experience.
Yeah, I'd be hard pressed looking at your stats to find a weekend that you would have went 0-12 ever. But good for you.
Well,
I'll
tell you what.
Yeah, I don't know.
Facing Underwood and Peter Finn as a left-handed hitter, you can go over on those guys in an awful hurry, lefty or right-handed hitters. You know, like I said, and you figured it out, or you were done. I mean, you know, if you never hit these guys eventually, you know, you wouldn't, you never got asked back.
Didn't stick around.
No, and that's the way it was.
It's funny you bring that up, Abby. Well, not funny. It's just the state of the game now. Like, we look back. You know, Dino and I have talked about this. We kind of got to play in the last big era of, you know, guys traveling around. And you know, you're talking about the pocket, right, in the Midwest. Well, there was a pocket in the Midwest. Ontario was still strong. The Prairies were strong. The Norwest League out on the coast was strong. There was all these teams where it was very strong. And I mean, Newfoundland would have been strong at that time, too. But now you look at it, and Newfoundland is probably where it all is right now, right? Especially in this country. So it's just kind of the evolution or the, you know, the game has kind of fallen off a little bit. But the way you talk, like, you would have faced guys like that every weekend, right?
I mean, we go for a four-game set in Decatur, and face Robbie Scheller, Chubb Tangaroa, and Brent Stevenson. And these, these were exhibition. These were exhibition games. This wasn't like a big tournament, or it wasn't, you know, in our local ISC travel league in Wisconsin. You're facing, you know, Allgaier and Henniger and Robertson and all these guys. And it was just, you drive for 15 minutes. You know, you play your four or five games on a weekend, and you face these guys just time after time after time. And, you know, like I said, it was. You're right, Tosh. There was all these different pockets, and even in your own little pocket, you played great ball. And then when you branched out and played, like I said, in the West, or you branched out and you went to Ontario, I mean, the tournaments were phenomenal. I mean, you know.
Obviously, just getting back, I wanted to find out, where did your biggest influence come from? Like, I mean, I know where you played. I mean, I know all the, like, no, I don't know all the records because there's too many. But who do you attribute your swing to, or, you know, I mean, because that's the big part of the game, I think, with you. Everybody looks back. I mean, you were an awesome defensive player as well that a lot of people don't realize. Mm-hmm. We used to kid about it when we were at the farm, but we, you know, we joke every time we could, but if you fell down, it was like we had to take advantage of it because it didn't happen very often. But as a hitter, who do you attribute, how did you get your swing? Because I wouldn't, you know, and I think we've talked about this before, we wouldn't teach somebody to swing like you. We can't do it. And I still, to this day, you know, wake up with nightmares. Where do I throw you? You know, when I had to play against you, it was like, you know, your swing was, it seems so long at times that I thought, okay, well, I'm never throwing him on the outside again. And then I'm going to jam him up on the inside, and then you rip one and kill our first baseman. So it was like, I don't know how you covered the plate so well. Like, where did that come from? Was it just kind of home built, or how did you come up with
that? It's a homemade swing. Yeah. I'm teaching kids more on the baseball side of things now than fast pitch, but I still get to do some clinics every now and again in fast pitch. I certainly wouldn't teach kids to, you know, stand where I stood in the box as far back as I could illegally, if you talk to most catchers, but I was back as much as, you know, and I was told an umpire, if you tell that pitcher to put 2 feet on a 2 foot and drag on the rubber, I'll be gladly step back in the batter's box. But you're letting these guys hop and jump all over the place. Well, I'm going to stand back as far as I can. It was a homegrown thing. Like, nobody, I mean, we didn't have much in the way of technical coaching. You had, like, my sister used to coach this great ball player in her own right, but she's not going to be able to teach necessarily the mechanics of a swing or that type of thing. I just found that the further back in the box I stood, the better chance I had. I mean, you guys, Dino, you know, Tosh as a hitter, you guys throwing the ball as hard as you're throwing us. I don't care about movement. I don't care about, you know, change-ups or anything else. You get as far back as you can because, you know, why stand closer to the pitcher than you absolutely have to? And I'm sure you're teaching similar things to that to your group of boys and girls.
Exactly.
But it was kind of evolved where I initially stood in the middle of the plate. But once again, you didn't know where to stand, so you just stood somehow close to the plate. And just out playing senior ball as a 15, 16-year-old kid in Newfoundland, good caliber ball. A lot of guys that nobody would have seen before, but a good caliber ball. And some of the older guys were like, you just can't stand there. You're going to get chewed up on the inside corner. And I was. So it kind of evolved. You move back, then you move off the plate as much as you can. And, you know, for me, I'm not a small guy. My arms are relatively long. I can sit in the back of the batter's box, still reach the outside of the outside corner, or even probably 6-8 inches outside if need be. But still, like you said, Dino, I was able to drop my hands enough to get to the inside corner that, you know, get the meat of the bat on the ball on the inside part of the plate. And that was effective because guys didn't want to throw inside because they could jerk it out of the yard or hit a line drive hard to the right side.
Or to a forehead.
And I'm sure we'll touch on a lot of different things, like to talk about launch angles and stuff in baseball. You know, I'm not a big believer in that. I mean, you square up a ball, and I don't care if it's with an aluminum bat or a wooden bat, you square up a ball, good things are going to happen. All right? Yeah. You get underneath the ball enough to drive it over the fence, so be it. But how many times you see guys get underneath the ball and pop it up to, you know, medium, deep outfield? you're 0 for 1, right? Yeah. Squaring up a pitch is the key thing. And like I said, that was more of a, get back to your question, Dino, that evolved. That was something that I worked on a lot. You know, at the middle of the end of my career, I stood in the same spot pretty much all the time. And, you know, change-ups didn't bother me, so there was no issue that way. I could get to either side of the plate most more times than not, inside and out. So, but it evolved. And I mean, I think it has to, because first when I moved to the, I was so far off the plate, people thought they could throw me outside. Then I was hitting that pitch. And then like you were saying, guys, you know, hang on now, this guy can hit the outside one. Maybe I need to throw him inside. Now I was getting to the inside corner as well. So now guys struggled a little bit to know what to throw you. I thought I could hit a changeup pretty good. So now all of a sudden now the up, down, in, out change, you kind of had them all covered. Yeah. And if you can do that, you know, that's tough on a pitcher because he doesn't know what to throw you. Yeah. You know, you can, and you know, as Robbie Gray said, I was one of the best bad ball hitters in the game too. I mean, you could throw it, you know, a foot over my head and I could hit a home run. Yeah. You could, you know, throw it, you know, ankle high and I can get a base hit. So, you know, that's not a great example to set for any young kids coming up. Certainly, I wouldn't want to try to teach that. But if you mix it all together, I guess, you know, you make a good hitting career from it all.
Well, and I think, Gabby, part of yours, and I would think that you would probably attribute this, because I mean, there was a lot of times at second base I was scared for my life, obviously. But you had phenomenal hand-eye coordination, right? And I think that it worked well for you because you swung with the same veracity at most pitches. Like you were swinging to hurt the ball. Whereas, and I think sometimes now that we're teaching the girls, I often say that really good hand-eye coordination hurts them a little bit because they can hit that pitch that's 8 inches outside, mm-hmm. but doesn't go anywhere, right?
Yeah.
So you're, or the one that's right on the black on the outside doesn't go anywhere. So if you let that go, yep, you take a strike, but you live to fight another day, right? And I should clarify when you brought up, you know, the ball 8 inches outside, we do need to talk about the Colin Abbott strike zone that umpires had too. It pretty much had to be dead red for them to call a strike.
No
on you.
Doubt.
Like, I think the only time you ever, you know, I don't remember you ever getting rung up. So I think the thinking was, if Colin didn't swing at it, it must be a ball. Right? Or I think that's what you had the umpires talked into anyways.
And I would tell the umpires that all the time. I say, man, listen, if that was a strike, I would have swung at it.
Well,
all right.
The best facial expressions ever.
Yeah.
Sorry, Donnie.
You'll know it's a strike by the crack of the bat, right?
So, yeah, you were saying that Tosh, you were scared at second base. I would argue the right fielder probably didn't feel very comfortable either, standing with you in the box. But,
well, not with me trying to stop it.
But, you know, we talk about in the program now about approach. What pitch were you looking for? What pitch were you hunting when you went in the box? Was it one that you hit harder that you looked for, or did you just hit everything?
I actually looked for whatever pitch was the pitcher's favorite pitch. I thought I could hit either one of them. So, you know, Dino, as an example, the old hard rise ball, for the most part. I mean, Dino had, I won't say he had three pitches because the changeup might have been number probably four or five down the depth chart.
My screwball,
whatever.
Backflip change.
Drop curve, you got all of them, yeah. The rise curve.
You had them all, Dino. You had them all. But like I said, you look for the pitcher's best pitch because usually 2-0, 3-1, that's the one you're going to get, right? Sometimes a guy will throw you backwards. So, you know, they'll mix in a pitch that's not their best pitch at a 2-0, 3-1 count, let's say. But most of the time, guys have got a heavy drop ball. Why wouldn't he beat with his worst pitch? So that's the one he shouldn't get beat with his worst pitch. So that's the one I looked for, just above the belt. I remember the first time, my first at-bat in Green Bay, wherever the hell we were playing, the guy throws one, and it looked to me just slightly high of down the middle, right? And nothing. The umpire was like, I look back like really? Like, that was a ball. So I thought he just missed it, right? So the guy throws a pitcher again. Ball two, and I'm thinking, wow, okay, right? So coming from Newfoundland, where you have a tendency maybe to swing at the higher one because you can hit it. Umpires down here like to give the higher strike, so you get used to swinging at the rise ball. you go to the States, everything is compacted. And you do have to factor in, you know, an umpire who might call it higher, might call it lower. You mix kind of those in, and now you're sitting on a pitch that's, you know, you think it's coming in a 2-0, 3-1 count, let's say.
So go back a bit. I know you said you started with Green Bay. You did win with Green Bay in 94. Was that your first ISC?
Yes. We had two ISCs before that. We were 2-2 our first year. We faced Robbie Scheller with Clearwater. Thanks for coming. We lose 7-0. And then in the loser's bracket, you know, we supposed to get a couple of easy games in the loser's bracket, eh? So we faced Larry Miller in our first game. So it was nice of them to throw Mike Roberts their first game, in the first four innings, because he was throwing maybe just slightly slower than what Meredith, who pitched the last three innings, was throwing.
Yeah.
So you go 0-2 and see you later on. 93 we were a little better. But 94, all of a sudden, PennCorp or National Healthcare, whatever they were called at the time, folds. So now all of a sudden, you know, I wake up at some point throughout the winter months, and we have Mark Sorensen and Steve Schott and Brad Underwood and Paul Allgaier and Sean Rychick, and it was like, okay. Wow. It was just like, all right, it went from a team that was, you know, average at best to, okay, now we got a chance. You start adding these players, then, you know, you know these guys are, most of these guys, Hall of Famers, they're legends of the game. All of a sudden, now they're all on my team. So we play in 94, have a great year, happened to win the ISC. One of my better memories, actually, I got the game-winning hit that year in the final, which is pretty cool. You don't get a chance to do that very often, so that was kind of cool. And at 23 years old at the time, winning your first ISC is like I said, 2-3 years previous, I didn't even know the ISC existed. Now, all of a sudden, you win one, and you win one as close to your hometown as you probably can get from an ISC point of view. And it was just, we had a great team. You know, like I said, overnight we just got all these players, and you know, and Russ Boyce was our coach, which
that helps.
Oh, great, listen, great guy, funny man. You know, great. He had that South. You want to talk about having an accent? You know, Russ Boyce with the South, with the South St. Louis all on him, and but just it all came together really, and for a team that wasn't very good to now become quite good. It was a treat to play with these guys.
And when did you leave Green Bay and head to the farm?
We folded in 97 after the ISC in 97 in Victoria. And then went to the farm in 98. And I mean, you know, how long do you have on your podcast to talk about?
As long as you want.
Farm and Rod.
Rod Peterson, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, to go there and one thing, I mean, Dino, Tosh, you could both attest to it. The Farm Tavern softball team, you know, Rod Peterson obviously being the head coach, you know, manager, owner, everything. But we always got good guys. They're all good ball players, because you had to be a good ball player, but you had to be a good guy. And, you know, if you fit the two of them together, which more often than not, that's what happened on our team, you know, it just made for, you know, 12-11 years I played there. It was just, you know, like I said, you know, however long you want on this podcast, just to keep talking about the Farm Tavern, just amazing experience.
Well, and it's one of those, and I got, you know, obviously there for a couple of years, and I always say that was one of the tightest teams I'd ever played on, you know, but it also, I know sometimes we came across as, maybe teams thought we were jerks because there was more laughing going on our bench and the game was way more fun in our dugout than it was on the field. Right. And you know what it's like when you're playing teams and, you know, we're probably winning more than our share of games and we're playing a team and everybody's yucking it up in the dugout. But yeah, it was, you're right. There was a certain type of player that fit and yeah, it was awesome.
And you get Todd Budke alone in the dugout, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, if he hit a home run and then you hit the next one to the fence, like,
oh yeah,
like there was weightlifting going on, there was everything going on, eh?
And yeah,
what do you do? Like you get so used to you know, there's a high level of ball playing that's there with the Farm Tavern. There's no question. I mean, we all wanted to win. We all played hard. But you're right. I mean, the amount of laughing and just this stupid stuff that went on. Like I said, I'm sure we'll get into a few stories as we go. But just the whole package of playing there, sitting in the beer tent. You know, we'd be sitting in the beer tent laughing, telling stories, and there would be 30 people around us we didn't even know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just listening to whatever stupid thing we might say or talk about an old ball game or talk about whatever the case was. And you kind of pick your head up and look around and go, oh, okay, we got an audience again tonight, boys, right?
Yeah. You touched on somebody just about hitting a home run. Well, of course, in our program, you know, if one of the girls gets a hold of one and it almost gets out, you know, the first things, well, we always say it right away. It's like, oh, got to hit the Bowflex. Another couple reps on the Bowflex, and they look at us with the weirdest look on their faces. One, what is a Bowflex, and what are you talking about?
It is too bad that a lot of these great jokes that we get to make as coaches, they don't get it yet, and hopefully they do, because they're prime jokes.
But yeah. they're going to be 25 years old. They're going to wake up and go,
there it is.
That's what he was talking about.
You got to use this one on the girls. If a girl actually does hit a home run, right, the next girl pops one deep, and you just got to get that girl on the bench going, man, no one's getting the ball out of here today, girls. Right?
Not into this wind.
Wind's blowing in.
It's impossible. I mean,
special person to get it out of here today.
Cut your swing down, right? Hit your single. Take it easy, right? The ball is up line for the day.
Station to station.
Well, and I remember, and I know we're not going to get too deep into stories, but one of the things about the farm, obviously the baby blue belts and the jackets and all that stuff that goes with it. But my first weekend, I remember it was like, okay, we're done playing at like 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night on Friday night, and it's like, okay, well, going for some pops or whatever, and so we'll go to the hotel and shower up. You're going in your farm A gear, so it's basically the gray pants and the blue top or black top, whatever we're wearing that night.
It was, we always said the all blue Friday night, that our all blue Friday night uniform, and I always said once the uniform comes off, I'm going to bed. Now that could be that could be 10 o'clock at night. It could be sometime later than that. Oftentimes it was much later than that. But once the uniform comes off, I'm going to bed. Like I said, whatever that is, it is. So.
Well, we've talked about it on the cast before that the farms has arguably some of the nicest uniforms anyone's ever seen. Those are your going out clothes, your uptown clothes. You got that uniform on. You might as well. You're not going to get a nicer outfit. Yeah, you may as well.
The mesh was a nice one, eh?
I had it on at George Street a couple of times in the winter.
That's fantastic.
So for the listeners who don't know, 18 times you've been to the ISC, which is absurd. People don't even play 18 years of ball, never mind that level. But you 10-time all-world outfielder. So I'm just going to read some of your stats. I know you know them, but for our listeners, I think it's important they realize the level of person we have on this cast. You have a lifetime 333 average, 120 hits at the IC, which is still a record, 86 RBIs, still a record, 326 plate appearances, still a record, and you're second in home runs with 26 and second in doubles with 24. You hit 500 in one tournament, which is what people do in slow pitch, not against the best pitchers in the world, mind you, but that's almost hard to believe. If I was creating a video game for a baseball on my Nintendo, I couldn't get a guy to do this with all the bonus points in the world, and this is the things you're doing in the game.
As long as you had my swing and me looking like Brad Pitt, that'd be perfect. That'd be
awesome. You'd have Henniger up there doing the big bat in the world.
Throw it all together.
Oh yeah, very nice. Bud Keith sitting over by the edge, you know, cracking jokes. Oh God. Hey, okay, so we would be remiss. I gotta tell just a couple memories of Rod, because I mean, we lost him not that long ago, I guess, but it was a couple of Rod memories. One was the first time, I don't remember where we were, but I know we didn't play very well, and he just got in his truck and left.
Like, Madison.
He got
in his Corvette.
He just picked up his, there was no down the line or anything. And if we had gone down the line, we're probably standing there by ourselves, watching our owner, manager, chief bottle washer drive away. At that point, you, if you've disappointed Rod, then there's an issue. You didn't play very well. But I remember we were in Kimberley, we were playing there in a, must have been league or something, and we're in the upper diamond. We're on a rain delay. Right? And, you know, we're all kind of going, okay, what are we doing? And he's just sitting back, arms folded, and he looks over at me and he goes, Tosh, that's $1 million rain right there. All the corn's getting all the rain.
Yeah.
He never would tell us either. How many acres you got, Rod?
He also did that in Eau Claire. Like outside of winning the ISC, Eau Claire was Rod's tournament. Right?
Yeah.
So we lose our first Sunday morning game, which would have been the quarterfinals, let's say, to some team that we shouldn't have lost to. Rod doesn't shake hands, which is not like him. And he apologized for this at a later date, but he goes, he walks out as fast as Rod could walk, because it was real fast. He goes out and he opens the trunk of his Corvette, and Dave LeBlanc crazy has got his gear in Rod's Corvette. Rod takes the gear right in the middle of the parking lot and just chucks it right in the middle of the parking lot. Slams the trunk, drives the Corvette out, and we're up having a few beers like you would, and crazy gear is there for hours, right? just sitting there. Rod was just a great guy. He did not like to lose, though. He could handle losing at times, depending on the situation. But when we didn't play well or just never went our way, he wasn't happy about that. We played hard. We lost a close game. It had sucked for a little while, but he was pretty good. But we did the same thing in I don't know, Dino, if you were there then, when we played in Madison when 0-5. And
is that like, that's the one where we're almost telling the same story. He walked out to his bed and he has that little ball bag, right? Like all that's in it is about eight balls, but he'd be the, don't leave no $6 laying around. I'm sure it was the same day. I remember that. It was in Madison, and I'm thinking, is he coming back? Like, where'd he go? You know? It's like, that was a tough journey. A
couple too many hours in the bowling alley.
Bowling pin beers, But it was, that was the maddest I've ever seen him. We played the ASA, I believe, the next weekend, and we picked up, I think it was Shocker and Sonnentag, two American guys to play with us. And he's furious. We're beating the team 8-10-0, and he's giving like bunt signs and stuff. He is just like, he's red. He got a big old head on him, and he's just red, right? He's red as a bee. And we know something's coming. So we go down the line after beating this poor team 10 or 15-0 at the ASA. And he looks at it, he goes, Shocker, Sonnentag, go to the beer tent. You don't need to hear this. We're in Decatur. We got the last game of the night. I think they're waiting to turn the lights off, and he's just giving it to us. We just won like 15-0, and he is just giving it to us. And the boys probably are half drunk by the time we even get to the beer tent, right?
He hadn't slept all week. There's no way.
That was pretty close to being the end of the Farm Tavern there. I mean, I remember talking to a few guys after, and they said he's not happy and
pretty hot.
He talked to a folded tent, but in typical Rod fashion, he got it out of the system and we went to Cater, had a few beers after it, everything was okay. But that was the maddest I ever saw.
So you won a game at the Farm though in 99 and 07. Anything of those two tournaments stand out for you as a story or memory you want to share with the listeners?
I mean, 99 might have been the best pitching performance that I've seen. More to the point that Paul Allgaier and Todd Martin were our two pitchers, two great pitchers, Hall of Fame pitchers, obviously. Marty had torn his groin in Grand Prairie in the lead up to the Pan Am Games that year. So Todd's feeling better, but you don't really know. So Alfie pitches the first game, we win. Todd starts the second game, throws six pitches, hurts his groin again. Those days, I'm not sure what the rule is now, those days you're only allowed two out of every pitcher.
Right.
So from game two on, like two batters into game two, we've got one pitcher. Our next pitcher is Todd Budke. Right? He's an American pitcher who is not a pitcher. Todd Budke.
You
goes,
asked Todd Budke, he's a pitcher.
Oh, Todd Budke throws a drop ball, a rise ball, and a changeup all down in the right-hand hitter.
And I do believe his ERA in the ISC is zero.
Yeah, I believe so.
I think there is something there.
But once again, not something you may want to go to in the middle of an ISC. So Elfie basically takes the ball and throws and throws and throws. We never got in the loser bracket, luckily enough. But if we had of, he would have just kept throwing. And we win that year. We had one pitcher, and it might have been the best pitching performance I've seen from the point of view that we only had one pitcher. Like there was no
had to happen.
Darren Zach has had great pitching performances at the ISC, obviously. But, you know, there was always another pitcher available should something happen to Darren, or Darren needed a break in a game. You know, the Gators are beating somebody by a bunch, you bring somebody else in. We didn't have that, right? It might have been one of the best things I've ever seen in that 99. I see the whole, like, he threw it all save for, like, two batters.
So we talked about 18 years in the IC, which is great. You played for Canada for 15 years. How'd you get picked up for Team Canada? What was your experience like with them?
Played the World Juniors in 89. Got picked up to go to the Pan Am qualifier in 89 as a 19-year-old kid. Got a really good, really good experience there. I mean, didn't play at all, obviously, as an 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid, but got to play with Ray Tilley and Pietnik and Scheller and Cowdery and all these guys that you once again are hearing about or read about at the time. And then really didn't do a whole lot until 95. Played at the Pan Ams that year. And once again, never got, played a little bit, but nothing, as expected. You're obviously coming in. 96, we get a few retired guys. Marty Kernighan retires. Some guys in the middle of the lineup retire. I go from not playing a whole, being on Team Canada, but not playing a whole lot, to hitting third. And like I said, you get thrown in to that situation as a 25-year-old at the time. It was the same thing as when you go to Green Bay in 92. You sink or swim. Right? You get thrown in and you either perform or you don't. And, I guess I was performing enough to hold that spot for 15 years. I look back and I've had some big hits with Team Canada, probably not as regular as I would playing with a club team, but the pressure that you're under on the Team Canada is a different animal as well. And like I said, it's the experience of it, the travel, playing with the best players in your country. It's irreplaceable. You can't even, it's hard to put into words how exciting it was and how much fun it was. And, once again, being from a little town in the northeast part of Newfoundland, to go to New Zealand, Australia, Venezuela, South Africa, I mean, it's just, the stuff that you can't even dream of as a young kid.
So you mentioned the sink or swim philosophy you have. Turns out you're a pretty good swimmer also then, because you did it very well, it looks like. So good for you.
I can't swim a stroke. I can't float. I can't do anything. I go to float, and I'm at the bottom of the pool looking up going, why the hell can't I float?
Isn't your province surrounded by water?
Have you ever been in the water around your province?
Pretty rough seas, Tosh. Pretty rough seas.
You will not last very long in the water around our province. 12 months
of
the
year. You can't swim, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, maybe maybe get a better analogy than sink or swim if you can't swim, because you've clearly done everything you can in the game. Maybe fight or flight or something. But man, if you can't swim, you got to stop saying that.
That's true. That's bad.
You're Michael Phelps, as far as I'm concerned. You're swimming laps around everybody.
I can't even swim with flippers on. I got flippers on. I can't even stay afloat.
I remember, Abby, it's one of those things you remember, and I remember the hit that almost was, because I think if this hit goes through, we win a gold medal in 2009 in Saskatoon, and that's the line shot to end the inning that Nathan Jones caught, right? Yeah. The diving catch against Australia, because we hadn't done much with cheese, and I guarantee that ball probably hits the grass and still goes through the fence. That's how hard you hit it.
And what pissed me off about that was the fact that they've been playing a shift on me for years. Yeah. So what the hell Nathan Jones was doing on the actual shortstop side of the bag?
Yeah.
If he had been where he was supposed to, where everybody else was playing me, that thing would, like I said, we went to the left center gap. I think we would have scored one, if not two.
Yeah. Yeah.
And with my speed, I would have turned a triple into a double very easily. right.
Yeah.
And but we would have been either in that game or leading. I can't remember the exact score, but
It was 2-1. And that shot goes through, ties it up, and keeps the inning going. And it was just—I mean, it was a great play. Jones, you made an awesome play on it. But yeah, the hit that almost was, because if that goes through, you know, we don't have to face the Kiwis again, and away we go. Okay.
Yeah, and those are the parts of any game that you look back on, and it's like, you know, what if, right? And it just never went our way, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, Abby, I think about you as probably a bit of a pioneer. I don't know a lot about the history of Newfoundland softball players before you, but I'm assuming that you probably the one that opened up the gate. And a lot of guys started traveling, you know, and I wrote down some names like, you know, Lolly and the Ezekiels and the Bolins and that sort of stuff. And a memory I have is not only were you a great example, because you were the guy that probably did it first, but we could have been at Hitters, we could have been at the Tap, we could have been at, what's the place in Eau Claire, the pizza place?
Ray's.
Yeah. We could have been at Ray's. Yeah. It didn't matter where we were, but the godfather of Newfoundland softball would be sitting at the corner of the bar, and you would have young Lollies and Ezekiels and all these Newfie kids playing with the bar and all these other teams, and they just hung on your every word. Now, granted, they're the only people in the bar that could understand you, I'm sure, but it was just like we would look at you and go, huh, the godfather's holding court again, you know?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that and how, you know, how that made you feel, because obviously you're the guy, like I said, that kind of started that whole trend, and we all know right now that, you know, many, many of our country's best players are coming from Newfoundland. And, you know, I think you should take a lot of pride in that. So just kind of maybe talk a little bit about being the first one.
I mean, when I was coming up, there was a lot, like I said, a lot of great ball players in Newfoundland. My family, I have two brothers and a sister, all in the Newfoundland Softball Hall of Fame. So not only was there in my own province, it was in my own house. So you're kind of bred into the fast pitch life. And I just got an opportunity to play the timing was perfect. We had a bunch of great ball players coming up through midget ball. Once again, I knew nothing. I knew we liked to play. We were pretty good. We played senior ball when we were 15 or 16. You get great experience that way. We go to a midget national and we happen to win. Then we go to in 89 at the Canada Games. We should have done better. We finished better than we did, but we had a good tournament. Part of it was just being the right age at the right time, play with the World Junior team. A lot of good ball players that I played ball with never got the same opportunity I did. I think what I'm kind of most proud of from what you're talking about is that I was able to get my game to a level where, you know, you're playing and performing well against the top ball players in the world. So all these kids, the Hills, the Ezekiels, the Bolins, the Clearys, all these kids can go and, you know what? Yeah, I'm from a small town too. Okay. Steve Law is from Freshwater, Newfoundland. Okay, mm-hmm. Like literally, you blink your eyes and like, where the hell did Freshwater go? You're all these small kids can go, hang on now. This guy from Port Phillip Cove can play with Team Canada, can play with the Farm Tavern and Allcar. I think I'm a pretty good ball player too. So you know what? Why can't I do it? And that's what I'm kind of most proud of, is all these kids come up. And if I had a small part to play in those guys being where they are now, then, hey, I'm ultra proud of that. to be able to, I guess, take my own game to a level where other kids can look at it and go, okay, I think I can be that good as well, then, hey, I think that's awesome. And anytime these kids are together and I'm sitting at the end of the bar and they wanted to have a conversation, listen, I love talking about ball. I love this. I will always talk about it. I love talking about it with you guys. I love talking about it with the Newfoundland kids. And as you know, Tosh, when we're the Newfie kids are together and they're drinking beer, there's really only a small group of people that can understand us at the best of us.
Oh, really?
Right?
What do you mean the young kids? I can't understand you and Obi half the time.
That's right. Me and Obi and whoever else with 2, 4, 6 more beers than you, then it's But it is a source of pride for me for sure. Like, if I had a small part in helping these kids do what they did and are doing, because you go to the local league down here. I mean, local league down here is fantastic. Especially this year with COVID on the go, these guys couldn't travel, so they were there every game.
Yeah.
So Cleary's throwing against Colin Walsh, and Jason Hill is pitching, and Robbie Green, and all these guys that are, top pitchers in our game are like in our local league here. And it's just, to me, like I said, and we got some other kids coming up too that you can see, are going to follow the lead of the Hills and Ezekiel, the Bolins, all those guys, follow their lead. And I'm sure these kids, Ryan Boland has a softball clinic similar to 222. Yep. He's doing great things. And you know what? That's awesome because the game needs it. It has to be that way. We have to get these your type of groups together because the game is, it's been on hard, harder times now.
Well, and I think too, the league in Newfoundland has come up many, many times on the podcast as being the ideal way to do it. And I think what ends up happening is all these young kids that are coming through it, they learn how to play the game the right way.
Exactly.
I look at what's going on in Saskatoon. So, there's lots going on here too. But they don't get to see, the kids that are playing at the top level are the top level. Whereas you don't really grow into that much anymore, right? Whereas, back in the days of Rempel Brothers and Safeway and all those teams. I do need to clarify something, though, and you can probably be on the record now for this. Your hometown, if I can say this right, Portugal Cove, Newfoundland, and you've been a resident there all your life? Is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So in 1998, when they considered you from being from Halifax, was that bullshit then?
What part of the legal system can I plead the fifth on that one?
I think the statute of limitations is passed, so you can
speak. As a member of the Halifax Jaguars, you were actually a local. You weren't an import.
This part is true. I won't expand too much.
it's like the Kennedy assassination. There's still a lot of people that are alive that maybe had something to do with it. So let's see.
You don't know, right? You just don't know this stuff. My nephew was in a basement apartment in Halifax going to school.
Yep.
So for a undisclosed period of time, I may have lived with him in that.
You're a liar.
That's why
great hitter and a liar.
That's why Colin I said Abbott. Undisclosed period of time. Undisclosed period of time.
I guess that's the truth.
Yeah,
it's undisclosed.
I guess so.
I'm not telling you.
I gotta go back. Tosh, did you just compare Abbott's may or may not have residing in Halifax to the Kennedy assassination and the people who knew about it?
That big of a conspiracy.
It's pretty big.
That's a reach.
Listen, Donnie. Listen. who won that year, Abby? Who won that year? You guys. The cheaters. They won.
All homegrown players.
That never happened.
All homegrown players.
You know what? During that era, though, it was kind of funny because every year there was a handful of guys that either, we're living somewhere, playing here, driver's license here, and every year we'd go to the tournament thinking, somebody's going to balk on that one, or get after it. No, never happens. They're all just playing. Doesn't matter. And you know what? At the end of the day, Rick. We had a lot of fun with it. Who cared?
Well, Rick Smith's name might have been on my utility bill in 2008.
That's correct. There
blackjack.
You go.
I had a Halifax driver's license, and I may or may not have had my picture at the Halifax casino as well. So, I mean, what else do you need? What else do you need to prove you're from Halifax if you don't have a picture on the Halifax casino?
Okay, here's the true test then. Have you been to the lower deck?
Oh, jeez. Oh, he's got his own stool.
Then he's a Halifaxer. That's it. That's your proof.
I've watched Signal Hill.
There it is, Dino.
Play at the lower deck. I taught Todd Martin how to throw with 2 feet on the rubber just outside the Halifax lower deck. I'm not sure how much either one of us remember of that, but I remember vaguly that I was teaching. Because he was struggling a little bit with the 2 feet at the time.
What a place.
I remember after the banquet getting stuffed in the back of the Jag, though. I remember that.
Yeah.
Nice rental.
The Halifax Jaguars,
nice rental.
He touched on that a little bit when we had Marty on the podcast.
Yeah.
Well, and now, I don't know if they changed the rule or not, but I know when we were in Nationals in Halifax, Brady Woods, who's from Manitoba, was throwing for PEI. And he clearly isn't from PEI. I know they allow an import pitcher here or there, but it's just basically, hey, who can go where? Let's
wasn't there something, though, like if you didn't have a team that went from your province?
No.
There was something like that.
No. There's a set number of imports, and the Halifax Jags had 19 that year. 19 imports.
So are you I'm not sure. Are you considering us cheaters like the Houston Astros of a couple of years ago? Are you putting
You compare him playing there to the Kennedy assassination, but not to the Houston Astros. I feel like maybe that's an easier step to get to.
No, because, okay, listen. When the Kennedy assassination files are released, because Trump says he's going to release them. So when they do release, we'll find out exactly what happened.
Weren't they already released?
We know Houston cheated. We know that. There's evidence. We finally, on the record right now, got evidence that Colin may or may not have lived in Halifax. We didn't know since 1998. Now it's out.
Okay, but now you're getting into conspiracy talks. Now I can start piping up here, right? So you're talking about Houston Astros? Like, they didn't even, it's gone. They did, it's just 2 years ago. Did anybody, like, they fired a coach, whatever. They're all playing just like nothing's going on, just swept under the rug. Like, I'm sure CNN's probably, they're not going to even say anything about it because that's CNN, you know.
CNN here is. Here we go.
And what was the other thing you said?
It doesn't matter, Dino, it's gone.
I know, frick. Jeez, well, you got my heart going there.
Dino. I wasn't anywhere near the Kennedy assassination. I will tell you that.
You were not on the grassy knoll.
I was not on the grassy knoll. Whether I lived in Halifax might be up for debate, but I'm good on the Kennedy assassination.
Okay.
I think enough time has passed where it's okay now. I mean, it is.
No, it's not. It's not okay. It's not okay.
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 Last thing about your Team Canada time, I just want to bring up two Pan Am golds, Argentina and Winnipeg. Which was a better tournament for you?
Winnipeg. I mean, 95 was a great tournament, don't get me wrong. I mean, we won. It was an exciting game, but to play in front of your home fans like that. I work with Investor Group or IG Wealth Management as we're now known. I got to get a plug in for my company.
No, fair. If I'd like to sponsor the podcast, we are taking in those now as well. So keep on.
Okay. IG being where our head office in Winnipeg and playing in Winnipeg, in front of your home fans, hitting a home run, fortunately enough for me, in the first inning, having a kid come up to me after the game and, give me the ball that I hit was pretty cool. I got drug tested after the game. Not so cool. The way we won, I mean, all this is the kind of storybook when you're young, 3-2 on the hitter, bases loaded, full count, bottom of the seventh inning, and Kevin Bobrovsky hits the weakest base hit you'll ever see in your life. He hits a one-hopper. Michael White, moves over to catch the ball, kisses his glove. David Boies is just standing there waiting to throw somebody out. We would have been in the eighth inning. Hits Woody's glove, goes to the outfield. So it's like, now it's all on, right? We just won the Pan Am, the front of our home crowd. I believe we were one of the last sports to play on that Saturday afternoon. So I think we got most of the media coverage as well, because most of the other sports were done. So I think we were on TSN, and I believe my wife was pregnant. Michelle was pregnant with my oldest son, Joel, at the time. So she's watching it at home. And of course, you know, my house here is full. And when I get home, when we partied for 3 days and everything, it was just the whole package of it was awesome.
Is that home in Halifax or in Newfoundland? Oh, I'm not sure.
Both
homes.
That was 99 at that point. So I had moved from Halifax after the
98. Okay, yeah.
Sure.
Right? So, yeah, so I was back home then.
That was
awesome. I mean, that's one of those storybook ending type of things.
Did you win the MVP that year, or do you remember?
Of what?
Of
Pan Ams. No.
Did you win it three times? One. Well, it said I looked in here. So you've got the MVP award with Team Canada three times. I wanted to ask you. Well, that's what it says on Wikipedia. I googled you. How big is your trophy room? I wonder. Like, I've got a room full of like DVDs and like some stuff. You must have to have built another room to put all this.
There's probably a few rings and plaques, and I'm not a big
couple like Tupperware bins.
I like my rings.
Sure.
You know, a few articles that would have been written and a few plaques and stuff, but I'm not a big, you know, outside of my rings, the other stuff is there. It looks cool because people that come in that haven't seen it before, go, hey, that's pretty cool, and I guess it all is. And it's just an area that you can, you know, have something there to say that you had a pretty decent career. But yeah, like I said, the rings are cool because they're big and shiny, and like I said, people like my finger is big, so it looks like this big old. Now people trying the rings on is all cool, but it's for me, it's the memories, it's what we're doing here now, it's the reminiscing, which I love to do. I mean, it's and. You know, when you retire, it's tough to do that all the time. But no, it's, you know, I got a few things kicking around in my basement.
I suppose it's well documented, by the way, that you have had a very good career. Tell us now, though, you've transitioned into coaching. You want to talk a little bit about that? How's that going?
Sure. Coaching baseball. And listen, you go where your kids take you, basically. Not much in the way of fast pitch for younger kids. They're slow pitch, but I've been throwing balls to my kids in the backyard since they could walk. So they didn't want to play slow pitch. They wanted to play something where, you know, someone was throwing a ball at them so they can hit it. And in Newfoundland then, and even right now, that's baseball. And baseball, and of course, I guess, a bit of name recognition from my end. You know, I was able to coach my kids as they were growing up. Baseball is, you know, it's a great sport. Let me clarify something. It's not fast pitch. All right. Yeah. So, you know, let's get that out of the way early. I mean, you know, if my kids had wanted to play fast pitch, like, you know, let's go. Get her done, right? But they never. And they had some buddies that played baseball, and, you know, they're kids. So that's how it works. But coaching baseball and coaching fast pitch is two different animals altogether. Way more moving parts in a baseball game. Like, I'm coming from fast pitch. How do you teach a pitcher to hold a runner? Right? How many steps do you get on a leadoff?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. Like, okay, I'll have to find all this stuff out. I don't know. No leadoffs in fast pitch. Unless you're Keith McIntosh trying to steal a base. Right? And, but, you know, you have to learn all of these things. Like, there's pitch counts.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is a pitch count? We never had that growing up. I wish when I was pitching, we had some gauge pitch counts. But there's pitch counts. You can throw one day and you can't throw for three more days. Like, there's, you know, when you get to bantam, using a wooden bat. Like, what the hell is that? Right? We don't. So there's a bunch of moving parts in a baseball game that's totally different than fast pitch. The basic fundamentals of hitting, fielding, throwing, pretty similar, right? They're not teaching baseball players now. Well, they're doing major leagues, I guess, with the launch angle stuff and all of that. You're not teaching a 10-year-old a launch angle. You can barely get the ball out of the infield. Right?
Yeah.
You're teaching them to you're teaching them to, you know, hit the ball on a line. And, you know, so, but I enjoy it. It keeps me around the ballpark. And I mean, my kids get to be themselves. They get to be Joel Abbott and Stephen Abbott. they're not Colin Abbott's kid.
Right.
Right. And that's what I like about it. You know, they have a bad game on a fast pitch, and two of the old timers that are there go, oh, you know, he's like, you know, you're not as good as your old man. You know, they're good ball players in their own right. They're Nationals. They played at Nationals, provincial teams, you know, third, fourth hitter, leadoff hitters. They're really good in their own right. But the fact they're playing baseball also keeps them away from, you know, having
the shadow,
you know, them compared to me. And they don't, you know, they don't need that. You know, they're their own kids, and they're good in their own right. So let them be good in their own right.
Well, to be fair, nobody, like, there's a short list. It's a pretty short list of people who are as good as you, kid or not. It's you've done it. You have a phenomenal name, great reputation. Your stories are awesome. I love coaching too, and here it comes, boys. I thought you'd think you'd get away with it. I love coaching too. Is there anywhere you'd like to? Yeah, here it comes.
Oh my gosh.
Is there anywhere you'd like to go with this team coaching that you haven't got to go yet? Because I have a story, and I'd like to go to Vegas. These guys go to Vegas, best tournament of the year, and I never got to go yet, and I'm dying to go. So, is there anywhere that you would like to go that you haven't got to coach in yet?
I mean, we live where we live. It's tough to get off the rock to play anywhere in any sport. Yeah. So to try to take a team away, like you go to one national, you might go in the Atlantic Provinces to a trip. That's as good as it gets. But I'd like to take a team to Florida, and just to see where you compare. Like, you know, you might get your asses handed to you, and you probably would. You know, baseball is their game, not necessarily ours. Mm-hmm. But I'd love to do something like that. Take a group of kids down there. Let them see how good they would need to be. Because the one thing about it is you don't know. When I started, I didn't know. Nobody knew. When I started coming up through as a kid, you knew you were good in your own little, you know,
world. Yeah.
Big fish, small pond world that you lived in. But you didn't know. So you got a chance to go away and compare yourself to the best players in the world. A lot of it was luck. I didn't know where the hell I was going. I didn't know there was softball in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I didn't know what the ISC. After a few weekends, after a year, you're like, hang on, I'm not too bad at this game either. I like to take my kids and another and their teammates and say, okay, let's go somewhere and do that. I'm not sure about Vegas. Me and Vegas have a little bit of a rocky relationship over the years.
Well, we do have an opening on our staff. Yep, if you want to come out, we can fly in, Abby, and you know, and
guest
you can impart some wisdom on. Yeah, for sure, that'd be good times.
Yeah,
that's funny that all these guest spots come up. Now, I'd like to hear from you. Do you have a couple that stood out to you that were either a great town, great facility, or a great tournament? And I hope you see the Legion Ballpark in Lloyd, because I'd be pretty pumped. But you go ahead. I don't want to influence you.
Well, that would have been my first choice, obviously, yes. Would be the ballpark in Lloyd, absolutely. My favorite place to play was always Kimberley. I grew up as a ball player there. We played there a lot. It's just a beautiful area.
Lower
Diamond is. I mean, you know, when we started playing ISCs down there, I mean, there could be 6,000 or 8,000 people there, with guys walking around with, you know, wheelbarrows full of beer, which is like, you know, if you're going to sit there for 4 or 5 hours, not a bad place to be. You know, and Eau Claire was a great place. I mean, you know, at the park, the Diamonds were, you know, and all the best players were there. So you got to see everybody. But those are, you know, and I'm sure I'm missing a couple here that I'm going to regret, but those two or three there are just, you know, they kind of stand out in
mind. The experiences you have make a big difference too, right? For me, Eau Claire, corn on the cob.
And cheese curds, Dino.
Just had the greatest corn on the cob.
They're fantastic. Wisconsin's got a we've all played in those Diamonds. They're fantastic parks.
Yeah.
And I will say this, like, the three of us are Saskatchewan guys. You're an East Coaster, but the hospitality you get at these Midwest places like Eau Claire, Kimberley, you get treated like just gold. You eat great. You drink. You have a great time there. So happy to have you there. So I love that. And anytime we've gone east as well, it's a fantastic experience. Anyone who hasn't traveled, I know we have a travel ban on. We can't go anywhere. Go to the East Coast. It is so nice out there. The nicest people. I think Peter Labardi said that on the last cast. He was great.
Yeah.
So here we go. I'm getting the the tap on the shoulder, like the coach is coming for the ball, time to wrap it up. The last part we have here is parting shots. So anything you want to leave with the listeners going out? And by the way, loved having you. Great stories. We could do another one for sure. But do you have anything you want to leave, parting shots?
I mean, listen, the sport we play, it's not professional, certainly, but it's professional as our sport gets, I guess. And the fact that I can do this with guys from Lloydminster, Saskatoon, New Zealand, Australia, you know, anywhere in the world you know somebody. And the fact that you can have these conversations and technology the way it is now, obviously we've been much easier to do that. I mean, we just need to get our game back up and running again. And, you know, Dino, talk what you guys are doing and what Ryan Bolden is doing. And I'm sure there's others across the country that we don't even know about. It's fantastic. I mean, listen, keep doing it. Keep leading the charge. And, I mean, you know, Tosh, you guys sending the group down to New Zealand, was it last year? I mean, that's something that these kids will never forget. I mean, you know, I don't even know how old these girls were, but just incredible, right?
Yeah, perfect. Thanks. It was a boys' trip to New Zealand, but, yeah, typically most of our teams are all, you know, on the female side of things. And should I just keep rolling then with mine?
Yeah, let's have yours, Dino, for sure.
Because I kind of have to tee it up here a little bit. So this was back in the day. We had a Canadian in Newfoundland, and I got the good fortune to go dancing with Abby's wife, Michelle. And, you know, she worked hard. You know, it's like one of those people that they really work hard, but it just, she wasn't quite getting it done. And it was a packed place. It was a packed place. And I think she might have just kind of caught my foot when I was kind of doing a spin. And we'd go down in a heap. And all I can remember, I mean, there might have been a little bit of, you know, alcohol as an influence, but we both went tumbling down. And I remember Michelle's hair in the... It was beer and everything that was on the floor of the bar. And she wasn't panicked to get up. I was trying to just, actually, I didn't even know where she was, but she was basically under me. And I think she was gasping for air and gut laughing as hard as she could. And I was just kind of bouncing around because she was laughing so hard. So hopefully this world gets back on track again. And this is more of a challenge. I want to, hopefully we get Canadians back in Newfoundland again next year, and you come back, and if you're not playing, at least you got to come to the pub one night, and I want to have a rematch with Michelle, get her out there, and a couple of spins.
Well, right. You know, I was there that night, and most of the story that you're telling is true. the thought of you spinning at any point in time
is not a good.
Thank God. It's actually frightening. It's kind of, it was at Greensleeves, by the way. It was after, I believe it was 95.
It was quite something.
Or 2007. I don't know. I can't remember a lot of things. But actually, she brings that up every now and again. You know,
she's
she has
a good sport.
And she has to go to the chiropractor usually a couple times a month just to make sure everything is still in line after that incident.
They call it the incident.
It's known, you know, people that were there, they remember it. Like, I remember Frank Cox. I'll guarantee you Frank Cox remember because he was trying to lift us up, trying to get us back upright.
People don't forget.
Well, see, it was bad.
I mean, we're talking about the Halifax incident. We're talking about, you know, the Kennedy incident. Now we have the Greenfield incident.
Yes, exactly.
A lot of deep political stuff we're going through here.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
Tosh, what do you got as a parting shot?
I really, you know what, I'm usually good for a couple shots. I was going to, Abby brought it up already, when Dino said he was spinning, I was just sitting here going, no, you weren't. There was no way you were spinning. You might have turned an ankle, you might have rolled an ankle, maybe that's what it was.
Well, again, I wasn't going to blame it on her, really, but now you're forcing me. You
caught
it. Got in the way.
Caught a toe pick maybe and down you went. But no, I just want to thank you, Abby, for coming on. I said it a lot that you know, not only are you, you know, one of the greatest of all time and maybe arguably the best hitter of all time, but you're a beauty, man. You are
humble.
You're an awesome teammate. Yeah, exactly. That's the word I was going to say, humble. When Donnie said, how big is your trophy room? You kind of hummed and hawed. I got a couple things, blah, blah, blah. There would have been guys jumping at that, telling you all about their trophy room. But I'll tell you what, buddy, you are a beauty, and you are an innovator. You basically, I believe that without Colin Abbott, a lot of these young kids maybe don't have the start they had. Not saying they're not great players. They're all great players. Mm-hmm. Stephen Mullally would have been a great player with or without you, but you led the way for a lot of these kids, and you should be very proud of that, buddy. So thanks again for coming on.
Hey, listen, guys, I appreciate it. I thought we might have went a little bit more into the how easy it was to pick Dino. I thought we might have got it out.
Yeah.
I thought we might have got a little bit more into that, but I guess, you know, it might hurt Dino's feelings a little bit more.
When
you come back.
Yeah.
When you come back next year, because I got to try to get your average under 900 again.
Well, when Dino talked about his pitches and you talked about Dino and the pitches, his three pitches, he had two. He had a good rise ball and a flat rise ball.
Yes.
That's what he had.
He had the high rise ball.
All right, now we're getting into parting shots.
Yeah.
I get it.
Good. Just because when Dino came out and the whole glove was wide open, you know, a lot of guys wouldn't pick that up, right? A lot of guys wouldn't understand that might be a rise ball. And it's just, you know, he hit that pretty well, but you had to really look at the finer points of the game to pick that stuff up.
Well, back in the day, Abby, his glove was so big because he had a burger in there. That's why.
Oh, come on.
Now, Dino,
parting.
We were in Denmark, and I believe you were kind of hunched over on the mound. We thought you might have been hurt.
We
thought you might have been hurt, but it was actually the hot wings that you had the night before.
Screaming hot wings.
They were very hot.
Terrible.
I'm like, oh my God, like, Dino's hurt. What are we going to do? And Rod goes out, and everyone gets together in the huddle, and then Gosley's starting to laugh. And like, okay, we're quite not as serious as it was. And
I got a bad
boiler.
It was
hot wings. The bad Abby, hot boiler.
Abby, I've got about five stories like that, but we don't have time. We'll get into those another time.
The only thing I want to say as a parting shot is, obviously, I coach in the Lloyd system now. I coach in the U19s, and you're part of the legacy that we talk about, part of that four-time national championship. That's a lot of pride in this program, and you are a huge part of it, and I really appreciate you coming on talking about your experience here, and thank you for coming on.
Thanks for listening to Tues Talk. New episodes weekly on Tuesdays. For more info, visit myloydminsternow.com or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.